Welcome to Parents Perspective. I'm Brendan's mom, Arlene panted out of breath from running through the parking lot. The school nurse said the ambulance was bringing him here. Just a minute, the receptionist poked her head toward the computer screen. What did you say his name was? Brendan. Arlene felt her lungs were going to explode from tension. Brendan Carpenter. Age? 10. He's only 10 years old. Arlene fought back her tears. Can't you tell me where they have him? They said he had a seizure. I don't even know if he's okay. The receptionist mumbled. Looks like they put him in cubicle 3, ER. It's that way, she pointed as Arlene streaked through the lobby. I'm Dr. Evans. A young doctor met her in front of Brendan's cubicle. Brendan is doing fine right now, but he's been sedated to make him more comfortable. Arlene's legs had turned to jelly, and she grabbed the back of a nearby chair. The words stuck to her tongue. Doctor, what is wrong with my son? We'll have to do some tests to be sure, he said gently. But do you have epilepsy in your family? From a parent's perspective, what should we know about epilepsy in children? I'm Sandy Burt.
And I'm Linda Perlis. Our guest does research on epilepsy and is involved in a major epilepsy research organization. Dr. Vicki Hollitz-Whittemore is the science program consultant for Citizens United for Research in Epilepsy, or CURE, as well as the vice president and chief scientific officer at the Tuberous Sclerosis Alliance. Dr. Whittemore's background is in anatomy and neurobiology, and she has worked in both academia and in the nonprofit sector. She's the mother of two sons, Andrew, 20, and Jesse, 24. Welcome to Parents Perspective, Dr. Whittemore.
Thank you. It's very nice to be here.
What would you say is the biggest myth about epilepsy?
The biggest myth about epilepsy is that you have one seizure, you can take medication, and it goes away. And in many cases, that's true, but still today, after all the research and all the drugs that have been developed, there are about 30% of individuals with epilepsy who will go on to have continued seizures no matter what medication or treatment is attempted.
Who suffers from this?
There are over 2 million individuals in the United States alone with epilepsy, and it seems to strike children. Many individuals with epilepsy will start having seizures, their first sign of epilepsy as children, and go on to have epilepsy throughout their life if they're not treated. And there's a growing number of elderly individuals who also develop epilepsy later in life. And then there's sort of a third group of individuals who develop post-traumatic epilepsy following brain injury. So it's a huge concern right now with all of our servicemen coming back from war with head injuries that we're going to see a significant increase in post-traumatic epilepsy in that population.
For children, is there a common age or a stage of onset? Are there certain critical developmental periods when this is more likely to happen if it's going to happen?
Many epilepsies in children start in infancy, especially those that we now know are due to a genetic cause. So there are many causes of epilepsy, and actually the community has begun to refer to it as the epilepsies because we know it's not one thing that causes epilepsy. There's many things. There are many genes in the brain that can go awry that can then result in epilepsy. And so usually in children, it will start before the age of 3. Sometimes it then will get worse during puberty, or if it hasn't started by the age of 3, will start during puberty when there's hormonal shifts going on. And so that's usually the typical thing that's seen in children.
Would you explain to us how this disease works?
What happens in the normal brain is that you have several different types of cells in your brain. You have neurons, who are the cells that talk to one another, and they're the ones that help us function, talk, see, smell, do everything that we do. And what happens during a seizure is that those cells become overexcited. And so rather than just having their normal conversation, they get sort of very wound up and continue to fire and create a signal, almost like an electrical storm in the brain, that depending on the type of epilepsy can result in different types of seizures. So there's seizures that are called focal epilepsies, and that means that there's one small area in the brain that is firing. So for example, if it's in the part of your brain that controls how your hand functions, then what you'll see when those neurons start misfiring or overfiring is you'll see tremors in the hand. If it's in another part of the brain, for example, that is the part that feels sensation, what you might see or feel as you have a seizure is there will be no tremoring or no visual sign of a seizure, but you'll feel a sensation because your brain is firing in that area that normally would be feeling touch or pain or something. There are other types of seizures where individuals just stop and stare. Those are called absent seizures. And what happens in those individuals is that they'll be talking along and suddenly they'll just sort of blank out, won't be there, won't talk. And even if you like wave your hand in front of them, they are not paying attention to you. And then all of a sudden they'll come back again. I think probably the most devastating seizures are those that occur in infants. And there are several different types, but one of the most devastating is called infantile spasms. And those seizures actually start and can involve the entire brain. And obviously that's what happens also in older individuals when they have grand mal seizures. It's not just a small part of the brain that's having a seizure. It may start in one part, but then spreads to the whole brain. And that's what then results in what most people classically think of as a seizure is someone who's laying down on the floor, convulsing, jerking, totally unresponsive. But the infantile spasms are a different variety of that, specific to infants, where their entire brain can be firing and they will have these jerking motions. And those types of seizures, especially left untreated, can cause cognitive development problems, developmental delay, and really serious issues for infants.
Dr. Whittemore, how long do these seizures last when they happen?
Anywhere from a few seconds to minutes. And the standard rule is if a seizure is going on for over 7 minutes, then you really need to do something. Call the EMTs, call 911, get that person to an emergency room where they can be treated. Nowadays, for someone who is known to have those types of seizures, there are home treatments that people can have, Diastat and other types of treatments that individuals can use that are called emergency or rescue medications. So an individual with epilepsy may be on several different or regular medication they take several times a day, every day. But if one of these more catastrophic seizures occurs, there are rescue medicines. So it's not really in many situations as dire a situation as it used to be when you couldn't have those medications at home and you had to get to an emergency room before you could be administered those medicines.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to continue our discussion on epilepsy in children.
The popular new book, Raising a Successful Child, Discover and Nurture Your Child's Talents, by Sandra Burt and Linda Perlis, is available at all major bookstores and on the web.
Welcome back to Parents Perspective. We are talking with Dr. Vicki Whittemore about epilepsy in children. What should we do if we think a child is having a seizure?
The latest is still put the person on the floor, lay them on their side. Some individuals, when they have a seizure, will vomit or cough up, and you don't want them to choke, but it's not a good idea to put anything in the mouth. So the best thing is to make sure the person's in a safe location, preferably the floor, so they can't fall or roll, laying on their side, and just stay by them to make sure that they're calm and don't try to get up or don't try to move. Some individuals will have a seizure and seemingly be quite okay after they have a seizure. Many individuals, however, will be very sleepy, very lethargic, and many people will want to sleep after they've had a significant seizure.
What happens if a woman is pregnant, or can an epileptic woman go through pregnancy?
Women who have epilepsy can get pregnant. We know that there are some anticonvulsive medications that are harmful to the fetus. And so it's very important for a woman who knows they have epilepsy prior to getting pregnant, talk with her neurologist and know which medications are safe, because some are safe, others can potentially cause problems for the fetus. But it is possible for a woman with epilepsy to carry a successful pregnancy.
What's the state of the current research on the disease?
The epilepsy research is very exciting at the moment. There are some new initiatives that have just been released by the National Institutes of Health, specifically the Neurological Institute, that's really going to focus a lot of research on epilepsy and understanding the cause of epilepsy. So for many years, the developments and the new medications have covered up the seizures. So they've stopped seizures, but it comes with a price. Many individuals have pretty significant side effects from those medications. And many times it's sort of a crapshoot. You go into your physician, he says, well, this is the type of seizure you're having, let's try this medication. And some individuals go through 20 or more medications before they find one that may or may not stop their epilepsy. So what's exciting now is that the dialogue has really shifted from looking at ways to just stop seizures to really understanding what's causing the seizures and treating that cause, and or eventually, we hope, have a way of identifying who's at risk for epilepsy and we can actually prevent seizures from starting.
It sounds like a very significant change in the approach.
It's been a very significant change that CURE has really been spearheading throughout its history. CURE was founded by Susan Axelrod and several mothers who were not satisfied with the state of the art of just putting their child on one medication after another, hoping that this medication was going to work. And they really have been responsible for changing the dialogue and working with the epilepsy community to understand that we need cures and we need treatments based on what's causing the disease, not just covering up the symptoms.
Can blood tests of a child who has epilepsy reveal anything significant?
Right now, there really are no biomarkers for epilepsy. What a blood test can do and what is recommended for a child who starts having epilepsy is that they really get referred to an epilepsy specialist that can help them to try to determine if there is a known underlying cause. So there are many genetic disorders that cause epilepsy. There are other kinds of metabolic disorders in children that can cause seizures. So a child really needs a full workup that will include blood tests for various metabolic disorders, genetic disorders, to try to rule those in or out. For many children, you won't find a cause. And we really don't yet understand what is the cause of all epilepsies. But to try to determine the best course of treatment, it's really recommended to go through that complete workup, primarily to rule things in or out.
How is the day-to-day life of an epileptic child different from that of a normal youngster?
It very much depends on the type of epilepsy the child has. So there are some children that only have seizures in their sleep, and you can imagine that the child then will wake up in the morning and not feel like going to school, be very tired because they've had disrupted sleep throughout the night. There are some children that have a seizure just as they're waking up in the morning. So again, those children are going to have a very difficult time getting up, getting going, especially if they're tired, lethargic after they have a seizure. For some children with epilepsy, especially those whose seizures are completely controlled with medication, they will have absolutely the same life as a typically developing child. But for many of the children who aren't that fortunate, days can be very challenging to get going in the morning. They may have a seizure during the course of the school day. They may be limited in the activities they can do. And I think what's especially devastating and difficult are those children who, because of the ongoing repeated seizures in the brain, really have significant cognitive issues, developmental delay. And so those kids will have significant challenges throughout their life, developing and going to school, with just not being able to perform on level. And that brings in a whole new area of having to deal with special education and tutors and therapies and all of those kinds of things that those children will need to be as successful as possible.
How could a parent tell if a, at least on the surface, normal child could have a seizure in the middle of the night or a seizure when first getting up if you're not there to know? How could we possibly know?
Most parents will, if their children are diagnosed with epilepsy, a lot of them will have monitors in the rooms all the time. I know parents whose children have, they share not the bed necessarily, but share rooms. So they have the child in their bedroom with them, but in a separate bed so that they can be close by and hear. So you can imagine that the parents probably don't get a lot of good sleep as well. If you don't know your child has epilepsy, you can very often sense that something's not right with your child. So if your child's having seizures in the middle of the night, they get up and they're lethargic, they're not themselves in the morning, you would begin to wonder if something wasn't happening at night. And you would want to then take that child to the pediatrician and explain what was going on and see if there was some monitoring or some testing that could be done.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to finish our discussion on epilepsy in children.
For an audio CD of any parent's perspective show, send a check or money order for $15 with your name, mailing address, and phone number to Parents Perspective, P.O. Box 42283, Washington, D.C. 20015.
Welcome back to Parents Perspective. We're talking with Dr. Vicki Whittemore about epilepsy in children. If you could talk with the parents directly of epileptic children, what would you want them to know?
I think the first thing I would want them to know is that there is hope right now. I think for many years, parents had no hope that there was going to be something to help their child. But I think now we know that there's a lot of research out there that's going to help these kids with epilepsy and help them to live happy, productive lives. The other thing I'd want them to know is that they shouldn't ever be satisfied with just a few seizures. If your child has epilepsy, is taking medication, and the doctor or people around you say, well, it's okay if he has just a couple of seizures every day, you shouldn't be satisfied with that. You should move on, find another physician, find better treatments, because there are many treatments out there now for children with epilepsy. I think the third thing would be that you need to be protective of your child with epilepsy, but don't smother them. They need to live life. They need to be experience things that all children experience. And then I think the last thing, which is very difficult to talk about, and many physicians have a very hard time even bringing this subject up, especially with parents of newly diagnosed children with epilepsy, is the risk of death. And there is something called SUDEP, sudden unexpected death from epilepsy. And what this is that parents who may or may not have a child with controlled epilepsy may suddenly one night go into their room and find them completely unconscious and even dead in their bed. Unexpected death with no underlying cause other than the epilepsy. And there's now growing research that's really beginning to make some headway to understand what that is. But doctors don't like to talk about that, but I think it's important for parents to keep that in mind and know that that's a risk that's out there.
That death isn't from, like, the child falling or bumping into something. It's actually from what happens in the brain.
Yes. And there's research now that looks like there's involvement in both the areas of your brain that control your heart as well as respiration. And it may actually be a little similar to SIDS. There's some research now that's looking at the overlap and also looking at common genes that might be shared between the brain and the heart, that when an individual has a seizure, it's actually they don't breathe, their heart stops. And so it's actually more like a cessation of life and not due to choking or falling or any kind of accident.
And there's no way when you go through a normal physical to know if a child's at risk for this.
That's right. There's some indication now that there may be some specific genetic mutations linked to SUDEP. And so that research is very promising, with the idea that a child who's diagnosed with epilepsy would then have that test to see if they're at increased risk for SUDEP. But I think my caution would be to all parents is those baby monitors need to be used. And there is indication that if you find an individual and can resuscitate them in time, that you can rescue that child. But unfortunately, that's not the case for many, many situations.
What about a parent who's epileptic, who has had a perfectly normal baby? Is there anything a pediatrician would watch for knowing that the mother is epileptic?
There are familial epilepsies. And so what that means is that we know that there is the possibility that a mother carries some gene mutation that's causing her epilepsy that she could pass on to her child. It's rare, but it's possible. And so I think what you would want is for the pediatrician to explain to the mother what a seizure in an infant might look like. For example, my son, when he was 8 months old, started having absent seizures. Those are the staring spells. And so I was just feeding him cereal one morning out on our back deck, and he suddenly wouldn't take his cereal, was staring off into space, and then his eyelids fluttered a little bit, and then he was right back. It happened in the course of maybe 5-10 seconds. But having seen my nephew, who also has seizures, have a seizure similar to that, I knew right away what that was. If I hadn't seen my nephew or didn't know that that was a seizure, I would have thought, oh, he was daydreaming. He was looking at a bird that was flying away, not paying attention. So I think, especially in a mother who has epilepsy, if the pediatrician can go through what to look for, what to be cautious of, you don't want to make the mother crazy also, but just things to be aware of, to watch for in a child.
When we were introducing you, we mentioned that you work with the Tuberous Sclerosis Alliance. Would you clarify what that is for us?
Sure. Tuberous sclerosis is a rare genetic disorder that affects about 50,000 individuals in the United States. We've identified the two genes that cause this disease, and what sort of brought me to CURE and the epilepsy community is that the majority of individuals with tuberous sclerosis will develop epilepsy during the course of their life, most of them as children. And my nephew was diagnosed with tuberous sclerosis when he was 3 months old and started having infantile spasms. So he was having hundreds of seizures every day that went on then to change into other kinds of seizures. And now at 25, he finally, I think, has days where he doesn't have a seizure, but it's very rare. He's on multiple medications, and it's really had a significant impact on, of course, on him and his family and all of us in the family. But tuberous sclerosis is making great progress. We are now in clinical trials, and there's also great hope for finding some treatments and a cure for that disease as well.
In the course of a normal life of a normal child, they go to someone else's house to have a play date. They'll go to overnight camp. They'll go on a trip someplace. What should parents know about these sort of away-from-home kind of situations where they're not in a school setting where there might be a school nurse or something?
I think it's very important if your child has epilepsy and they're going to stay with a friend that the parents know and understand about the epilepsy, about the medication they're on, what things to watch for. But I think you also have to let the child have a life and be with their friends. But I think just making sure everyone's aware and educated about epilepsy and about what that child's epilepsy means for them.
Dr. Whittemore, we'd like to have some resources that we could suggest for our listeners who'd like to know a little more about what we've been discussing. Suggestions?
Yes. Listeners can go to the CURE website, which is cureepilepsy.org. And the 800 number there is also 1-800-765-7118. And the other number for them is 312-255-1801. The other resource that I would recommend is the Epilepsy Foundation of America. They have local affiliates throughout the country, and they have wonderful resources, support group meetings for parents and for individuals with epilepsy, as well as to sponsor summer camps for kids with epilepsy, which is really a wonderful thing that they do for kids with epilepsy. Their website is epilepsyfoundation.org, and their 800 number is 1-800-332-1000.
Well, you have been a wonderful resource for all of us listening, and we are very grateful that you took the time to come and educate us more about childhood epilepsy. So, Dr. Vicki Hollitz-Whittemore, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you for having me here.
Our gift for our first caller is an autographed copy of The Little Book, a collection of stories and articles, parenting tips and resources for all parents and caregivers, especially those who love and care for children and teens with special needs. Just call us toll-free at 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address. That's 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address, and mention show number 436. Tell us, if you can, what station you're tuning into.
Visit our website, www.parentsperspective.org, where you can even listen to a show of your choice. This is Sandy Burt and Linda Perlis. We're glad you could share Parents' Perspective. Today's program was made possible with generous support from the SF Foundation. Our sound engineer is Elizabeth Buckle. Music for this program was composed and performed by Jonathan Burt.